Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thanks for downloading, and I sure hope you enjoy the show today. This story was first published on December 1st of 2023 under the headline, Six Iconic Food Items That Were Invented in Oregon. Today we have part one of a two-part presentation of this story. We'll cover three of the food items today and another three in part two, which will be on the podcast tomorrow morning. And by the way, a big one got left out of this article, the Eat It All ice cream cone. There will be another column coming out soon that will rectify that oversight. Now, here's part one. At the time of this writing, the Christmas shopping season is just starting to spool up and folks are getting ready for some serious holiday eating. Most likely that festive feasting won't include many of the things on this list. Although inventors from the Beaver State have had a big impact at the grocery store, most of what they've created would be a bit out of place at a Christmas dinner. The big exceptions, of course, are the products created by scientists at Oregon State University, Marion berries for pie and modern processed maraschino cherries for holiday punch bowls. So let's get started with those. The Modern Maraschino Cherry, 1929. Maraschino cherries originally came from Italy, where a particularly nasty variety of wild cherry called the marasca grows. Marascas fresh from the tree are sour and bitter, but the locals over the years figured out that they could be made into a particularly scrumptious kind of liqueur. Even better, when whole marasca cherries are pickled in that liqueur, they become delicious. The cherries caught on with high society drinkers who loved them in cocktails. The problem was, like a lot of wild fruits, marascas aren't prolific, so the cherries were very expensive. Various other cherries were tried, both for the fruit and for the liqueur, and some non-alcoholic formulas were developed as well. Most of these foaschinos were pretty bad. Writer Inara Versmanix, apologies for that pronunciation, I'm sure that it was wrong, found a number of articles from early 1900s newspapers complaining about their quality. Then along came Prohibition, and with it, the original Italian ones became unobtainable. Meanwhile, cherry growers in Oregon were trying to figure out how to get into the market with a proper non-alcoholic maraschino cherry made with a safe, reliable industrial process. The climate in the Willamette Valley was nearly perfect for growing cherries. The ones that grow best here, though, are the big, sweet, juicy ones that break down into mush and turn unappetizing colors when pickled or preserved. One particularly disgruntled cherry grower happened to be a brother-in-law of William Jasper Kerr, the president of Oregon Agricultural College, now Oregon State University. The college had just hired a hotshot horticulture professor named Ernest Wiegand a few years earlier, so Kerr put the problem before him. Wiegand basically spent the second half of the 1920s working on it, trying various formulas to get the cherries right. In the end, he figured out that certain calcium salts would firm the cherries up. One of Wiegand's colleagues, Bob Kane, developed a technique for safely bleaching the cherries so that they would end up ghost white, ready to be dyed with food coloring, or in the case of more recent offerings, extracts of beetroots and other natural colorants. And with these twin breakthroughs, Oregon became the dominant player in the maraschino cherry production worldwide. The Marionberry, 1956. The Marion cultivar of blackberries has been the most widely planted blackberry in the U.S. since the early 1980s, and for anyone looking forward to some home-baked pie after Christmas dinner, marionberries just might be involved. In fact, they ought to be. Blackberries, as most Oregonians know all too well, are a type of fruit that combines some of the worst qualities of a plant with some of the best. Few fruits are anywhere near as delicious as a ripe, juicy blackberry. But the vines tend to be sprawling and disorderly and covered with great spiky murder thorns. At their worst, they grow astonishingly quickly, are very hard to eradicate, and shade out everything beneath them. The common invasive Himalayan blackberries that grow all over the wetter parts of the state are the best example of this type. In the mid-1930s, when OSU professor George Waldo set out to breed what would become the Marionberry, there was an almost a direct correlation between the quality of the fruit and the density and awfulness of the brambles it grew on. One could find blackberry varieties that were well-behaved and almost thornless, but the fruits were small and not very juicy. Or one could take the all-too-short walk to the nearest tangle of wild Himalayan blackberries and find the opposite. Waldo set out to breed the perfect blackberry, one with delicious fruit and well-behaved vines. He actually spent two full decades on this quest, starting in 1935 when he cooked up a cultivar called Santiam by crossing Loganberries with Pacific blackberries. Those are the tiny ones frequently found on forest floors with long, not very spiny vines and few leaves. Then in 1936, he crossed Santiam with the infamous and ubiquitous Himalayan blackberries to get a variety he called Chehalem. Chehalem berries were tasty, but the vines they grew on were a little too reminiscent of their disorderly, horrible Himalayan parent, so Waldo made one more cross, breeding Chehalem berries with Olali berries. Olali was another hybrid that Waldo had created the previous year by crossing two older, traditional varieties, young berries and black loganberries. The result was the Marion blackberry, a fast-growing but well-behaved vine with thorns that were not overly vicious and large fruits that practically melt in your mouth. Its main bug is really a feature for home growers and farmers market customers. The berry skins are so tender that they don't take rough handling very well, so mechanical harvesting is tricky. They are also very sensitive to cold, so about the only place they grow well is the Willamette Valley. Most Marion berries are still grown right in Marion County, the county they were tested in and named after. The Garden Burger, 1981. If your family is on track for a vegetarian Christmas feast, though this featured Oregon food invention might actually be on your menu in some form, or at least a product derived from it, the Garden Burger, that looks like a hamburger from far away food product made of rice and mushrooms and cheese, was invented in Gresham by a vegetarian health food gourmet named Paul Wenner. Wenner, in 1981, had just opened a vegetarian restaurant called the Garden House in Gresham. One of the meals on his menu was something he called the Garden Loaf Sandwich. Its contents, the eponymous loaf, was a formula he had developed previously when he'd mixed some chopped mushrooms into leftover rice pilaf bound together with cheese. The Garden Loaf Sandwich was a hit, so he added another version of it to the menu, a patty made of garden loaf stuff. He called this, of course, the Garden Burger. Well, the Garden Burger was a bigger hit than the restaurant. By 1984, Wenner could see that the restaurant was holding the Garden Burger back, so he joined forces with a customer, Alan Smalland, got a meeting with the CEO of Louisiana Pacific for the financing end of things, and pitched a plan to take the Garden Burger nationwide. The CEO, Harry Merlo, made the deal with the understanding that LP would take over operational control after Garden Burger got off the ground. So Wenner closed his restaurant, founded Wholesome and Hearty Foods, Incorporated, and set about hiring the staff he would need to market Garden Burger in health food stores as well as the increasing number of mainstream supermarkets with granola departments or health food sections. The company got into some trouble by over-leveraging in the 1990s and had to take bankruptcy protection. It emerged a year later, leaner and stronger, and now owned by a New York investment firm, which later sold it to the Kellogg Breakfast Cereal Company, which owns it now. Kellogg took everything out of Oregon. Today, the company is based in Irvine, California, and its production plant is in Clearfield, Utah. But Oregon vegetarians still remember when Garden Burger was a local vegetarian delicacy, although their holiday feasts probably will lean more on the offerings of tofurkey served with plant-based cranberry sauce rather than Garden Burgers. Yes, I know cranberries are plants. It's supposed to be a joke. You can't be funny on the internet anymore, you know that, right? That's it for today. We'll explore three more iconic foods that have Oregon roots in tomorrow's column, part two of this two-part series on the famous foods invented right here in the Beaver State. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. What you've been listening to is one of more than 700 stories originally created and published as newspaper columns in first-run syndication between 2008 and today. You can read them all at offbeatoregon.com. Other Offbeat Oregon goodies include an active Facebook page, a ton of historic photos, and a bunch more stuff, including visuals for today's show and full citations to sources, all accessible through our hub page at offbeatoregon.com. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and learn more at atlasstringband.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.